magic bolts haphazardly, snarling in frustration with each one. He'd lost me again. I scuttled around a corner and saw the door barely yards away. Unfortunately, all the furniture and partitions around it had already been destroyed, so getting to it would mean stepping out into plain view. I edged forward and peeked out from around a sizzling waste paper basket. Barry was facing the other way, indiscriminately blasting his way through former pirates and Yawnbore residents. I carefully pulled myself onto my feet, not taking my eyes off him. I had to make my move now and hope he didn't turn around. I began to tiptoe my way across to the door. 10 yards to cover, then 8, 7. Don't let him turn around, Dub Us. This is your chance to redeem yourself. Plenty of desks over there I could be hiding behind, Barry. No need to turn around. 4 yards. Don't turn around. Don't turn around. Don't turn around, you bastard. Don't... It was probably the bastard that jinxed it. He turned around. I froze, a full yard from the door. His magic spurting hand slowly came forward again, with the cold, callous deliberation of a hunter aiming his crossbow at a startled deer. I raised my arm, instinctually responding to his long-distance high-five. Both our lips moved rapidly, framing the magic words of our respective trades. I screwed my eyes shut. I heard the sound of magic crackling through the air, and I waited for the prickly hot sensation that would be the last thing I felt before my nervous system was reduced to a smear on the nearby wall. When I realized I was still in one piece, I opened one eye. A very bewildered bunny rabbit was levitating in the center of the room, paw still outstretched in a vague casting gesture. My body was getting more and more damaged, but I could still move quickly when I had to. It seemed like one moment I was at the door with my hand around the knob, and the next I was on the other side, pinning it shut with my back. The room beyond was perfectly spherical, and I was standing on a narrow bridge about halfway up it, terminating in a circular platform in the dead center. The curved walls were the source of the glow I'd seen from outside. They were divided into a grid, and each illuminated square displayed a region of the world viewed from above. I recognized Lolied City, its tired populace shuffling through their daily lives, indifferent to the oppression of Barry's zealots. The people of Applewheat eagerly pillaging each other. The rubble and sand that remained of Yawnbore, dotted with new signs promising the future construction of a spa and religious retreat. There was a view of 2 circular step pyramids side by side that I think were in anorexia. It was like a digest of civilization for some cosmic voyeur. There was absolutely no doubt in my mind that I'd found Dub's machine. I'd been in the room for a full second now, and the time I had bought was ticking away fast. Behind me, I heard the ominous sound of a rabbit adorably pawing the other side of the door. The machine itself was disappointingly small. It looked vaguely like magic technology, but none I'd ever seen. It was a small rectangular black window, floating a few feet off the ground, attached by a thin wire to some kind of flimsy console. It seemed to be emitting the loud, continuous rattling sound I'd been hearing since I arrived. The screen was displaying a single word in glowing white letters. Command? I took a closer look at the console. It was rectangular and almost completely covered in buttons. Most of them were labelled with numbers or letters of the alphabet, while the rest bore strange symbols that I couldn't even begin to comprehend. I pressed one of the lettered buttons, and the same letter appeared on the screen below the first word. All right, this seems self-explanatory. Delete me, I spelled out. It took an achingly long time, because for some reason the gods had laid out the letter buttons in some stupid, unintuitive order that had nothing to do with any alphabet I knew. I waited for a response, but none came. I started rapidly pushing buttons at random, painfully aware that Barry's bunny morph wouldn't last much longer, and eventually provoked a reaction from the machine. File not found. Me. I looked fearfully back at the door when I heard furniture crashing again. Barry had changed back. He would be disoriented from the transformation, so he probably hadn't guessed I was in here yet. But it was only a matter of time, and there couldn't have been much left to destroy out there. I tried another tack. Who are you? I wrote. Syntax error, unknown command, who? This was going nowhere. I had no idea who was on the other end of this screen, but there was no getting through to them this way. What had Dub said? I had to spread the corruption from inside myself to the machine. The same way I'd spread it to Drilda when I was dead, I recalled. I have to be dead for it to work. I looked around. I could hear holy magic being cast very close to the door, and the occasional solid object being hurled against the wall. I considered throwing myself off the bridge, but the fall might not have been deep enough to kill me, and there was no way back up. I glanced desperately around before my gaze returned to the door. I jogged on the spot for a moment, psyching myself up, then bowed my head and ran at full pelt into the doorknob. Now I had a big dent in the top of my head, and the room appeared to be mounted on a giant malfunctioning merry-go-round. Dying had always been a lot easier when I'd had a convenient necromancer's tower, or obliging psychopath. I got up, narrowly avoided falling off the walkway, then staggered forward again for another go. Barry must have kicked the door open a split second before I hit it. There was a sound like splintering wood mingled with the sound of a boot stamping on a bowl of cornflakes, and I died. My body went one way and my soul another. I looked down at my increasingly damaged body hanging precariously off the walkway. Then I turned back to the machine, and my astral jaw dropped. The room was suddenly a lot more crowded, and not just because of the addition of Barry. Tiny deleters were pouring steadily from the top of the screen machine, expanding rapidly to full size as they emerged. With mindless professionalism, each split off in turn and flew smartly into one of the glowing windows, heading off to deliver unwanted resurrections like a flock of poorly briefed storks. The dead world was still flickering back and forth between the normal grey and the disquieting green lines on black. In the former, the machine looked like a screen and a panel of lettered buttons, but in the other, it was a hovering sphere of white light, like the cue ball from God's billiard table. I heard a chittering sound, and looked down at my hands. The unwholesome-looking tiny deleters that crawled in the hundreds over my astral form were getting excited. They fought each other to climb to the very outlying tips of my fingers and reach out their little insectile limbs towards the machine. As I floated towards the centre of the chamber, a few of the busy deleters brushed past me unconcerned. Some of my little companions took the opportunity to leap off me onto one of them. I watched in horror as the tiny deleters reproduced madly, spreading themselves over their infected cousin as it twitched and shuddered in voiceless agony. I almost pitied the thing, and it made me wonder what exactly I was preparing to unleash. I reached my hand towards the screen, but something stopped it. A few of the deleters in the room had stopped to watch me, and the astral energies of resurrection were tugging at my limbs, Barry was in the middle of nudging my body off the walkway. Gritting my teeth, I summoned all the strength I had, hurled myself against the deleter's inexorable pull, and saw my astral hand pass through the machine. Only for a moment, but long enough for my bug deleters to jump off and start breeding. The screen went blank, then began to flash the word error over and over again, before coughing out one last handful of twitching, crippled deleters like a glob of tuberculotic phlegm. Barry froze when all the windows on the walls simultaneously whited out. His head snapped around in time to see the screen fill with a storm of punctuation marks. All the deleters that remained in the room were convulsing madly, including the ones growing out of Barry's back. "Oh, you little," he began. I couldn't resist the pull any longer. I was yanked off my astral feet just as my body slid off the walkway and onto, then into, one of the flashing windows. Barry, frantically pressing the lettered buttons, either caused the following explosion or failed to prevent it. Then I came back to life. I returned to my body just in time to land heavily on something hard, roll down an incline, and come to rest sprawled on my back. I was in the real world again. The windows in that spherical chamber had apparently been some kind of magical teleport. The sky was a healthy blue, and the morning sun shone down on me with oblivious good cheer. But sooner or later I was going to have to sit up and spoil it all by finding out where the hell I was. I sat up. I was in the middle of a featureless plain of smooth, unweathered rock, rising and dipping in perfectly curved hills and valleys. There weren't even any cracks or jagged edges to liven the place up. Nothing but a desert of lifeless stone, contoured like a collection of upturned bowls covered by a sheet. I took a moment to survey the damage from my landing. My left arm had been paralysed for a while, but now I couldn't persuade the fingers of my right arm to move either, nor my right leg. A few sections of my skull shifted whenever I moved my head, making me see marvellous colours. If I was going to be stuck in this body much longer, I was definitely going to have to look into a long-term repair solution when I got back to civilization. But in what direction did civilization lie? I dragged myself to the top of a shallow knoll, but saw only the same wasteland stretching to the horizon in all directions. Where the hell was I? I ran through the possibilities, and none of them seemed to fit. There weren't enough sheep for it to be Garethy, nor enough wayside inns for Lowlead. Anorexia was covered in jungle, and you'd never find a clear, smokeless blue sky in the Malevolands. "Oh," boomed the sun, "you're still here?" I spun around, which was a mistake, because I lost my balance and rolled back down the slope. "What?" I said. "Sorry. I guess it's because you were in the debugging suite when the server crashed." "Dub?" The voice was virtually identical to Simon's. "What happened?" "You did it," he said. His voice seemed to be coming from the entire sky. "You crashed the server. There was a hard reset, and Simon's encryptions were removed. I've got my admin status back." It was definitely Dub's brand of thoughtless gobbledygook language. "What?" "Oh, sorry." A pause. "Your corruption spread to the very building blocks of the world. The key to Simon's control was erased, and my holy power is restored." "Where am I?" Another long pause. "You wanted to get deleted now, right? Just tell me where I am! Wherever his actual physical body was, I felt certain that his godly foot was awkwardly stirring some heavenly dirt. You're in Lolied, the middle of Lolied City, actually. I took a good long look around before replying. Where is everything? Okay, don't get mad. The thing is, Simon did a lot of damage, and I didn't think I'd be able to fix much of it straight away. So in order to remove all the stuff he did, we had to remove a few other things too. My eyes narrowed. How many other things? Well, everything, except you. A lingering pause ensued. Probably everything. There might still be some things left, haven't checked yet. Looks like everything. Let me know if you see anyone. Everyone's gone except me, I said. I wondered if there was a word that meant ironic, but in the most hysterically brutal and unfair way. Can you bring them back? No. Sorry, no. What we've done is basically turn the clock back to the beginning of time. This is the rock layer before we added water and life and all the other bits, so we could start getting the actual gameplay together. A cold and terrible realization washed over me like an acidic tidal wave. We. Well, began the sun. Oh, shit, brub. Then it vanished. So now you know, said Barry. I spun around, losing my footing again and falling on my arse. He had materialized about 20 feet away, above a neighboring hillock, still floating and still crackling with magic and indignation. "Tell me something," he continued. His voice was calm, but the rest of him was shaking. Was Simon's vision of the world so terrible? Was it so abhorrent you couldn't even bring yourself to raise your objections in a mature, civil fashion? You just had to run off and smash it all to bits? What are you, 5 years old? I didn't know this would happen. He snorted. Then you were played for an idiot. But that's what they do, isn't it? That's what they've been doing to us since the beginning of time. Lord Simon told me. This is the truth that I was trying to make people like you understand. The Lord was the only one of their kind with the decency to tell us. I was still half lying on the ground in a position of total vulnerability, but I couldn't bring myself to move. Tell us what? How much do you think you know about it all, really? About the infusion and the angels and the syndrome? That 15 years ago these all-powerful celestial beings descended from on high, stopped anyone from dying, and started possessing adventurers on a twisted whim? Is that what you think? It's true, isn't it? Yes, yes, it's true, but it's only half of the truth. I believe your friend just gave you a rather large clue as to the other half. The horrible thought I'd had earlier appeared in the back of my throat. I laboriously spat it out. They created us. Precisely. He was pacing back and forth at around eye level as he spoke. They created us, our planet, everything in it, and the entire history of our species, so that they could one day use it for their entertainment. All our evolution has been guided from the very beginning towards making our world perfect for adventuring. That's it. That's the meaning of our existence. His sickly grin didn't seem to have anything to do with his regretful eyes. Incidental characters in someone else's quest. That's all we've ever been. It was all true. I knew that instantly. It was like I'd spent my whole life being followed around by a man making obscene gestures behind my back, and now I'd finally turned around and caught him with his tongue out and his middle fingers up. "Oh," I said. Barry scowled. "I used to spend hours pondering the meaning of life. I had so many theories. Until Simon gave away the twist ending. After that, I had nothing left. The only thing left to do was start telling the truth to everyone else." "You bastard," I said, without passion. He hung his head. "Yes, I'm the bastard. I'm the villain. But I couldn't be the hero, could I?" He glanced around at the empty landscape. "It was better than nothing." I was too lost in thought to see him waggling his fingers. A holy blast sent me into a ragged backflip, throwing me onto my face. I slowly and laboriously lifted my head to see that my left arm was missing, along with a football-sized chunk of attached torso. "There you are, Barry," came the voice of Simon, as I struggled to wriggle away from the vicar. "Your god has been looking for you." "My lord," said Barry, falling to his knees in mid-air. "It's gone, my lord, everything except this creature." "What did he do to the build? The debug logs don't make any sense." "I regret that I have failed you, O Simon," went Barry, averting his eyes and clasping his hands. "He inflicted his corrosive essence before I could stop him." "Smooth move, dipshit," said Simon to my motionless form. "Dub put you up to this, right? This is exactly the sort of thing he'd do, the big baby. I've locked him out again. You're at the mercy of Simon's judgment now."
"Just delete me," I whispered. "Please."
"Hardly seems to matter now, does it?" said Simon, as Barry glanced at him hopefully. "There's nothing left for you to corrupt."
"Does that mean I may deal with him as I see fit, my lord?" he simpered.
"You may, my faithful servant." Instantly I was pulled off the ground by invisible puppet strings until I was dangling from my head with my remaining limbs splayed out. Barry put his head on one side and considered me like an artist debating what size brush to employ. I felt the stitches and tendons in my hip strain against the invisible force for a brief moment. Then my right leg was torn from its socket with a sickeningly meaty squelch. Barry threw it away like a chicken bone and slammed the rest of me back into the ground. A little part of my mind was trying to make me move, to resist. But what the hell did it think I could do? Run away? To where? "What of our world, master?" said Barry, as he circled my body. "Well, not much more I can do to fix Mogworld, is there?" droned Simon petulantly. "The mighty Simon is thinking it's time to salvage what I can and move on to greater things. At least I've still got you."
"Me, my lord?"
"Yes, Barry, I've decided to bring you with me," said Simon magnanimously. "You will ascend to a new world." The vicar's eyes lit up, and he clasped his hands together as his heart swelled with gratitude.
"Can it be true?" he asked, choking up. "I will finally be allowed to walk among the gods."
Simon hesitated at length, the same way Dub always did when there was something he didn't want to tell me. "Not exactly. Not walk anyway. You can't go in your current body. You'll take on other forms when I bring you to other worlds. You'll have to get on top of some special jobs for your mighty god when you get there."
"I am ready, my lord."
"Then we'll get going as soon as you're finished here." I was struggling to get up onto my one remaining elbow when a sheet of white fire swept across my body, neatly severing my arm and cleaving through my torso. I pulled myself forward with my chin and shoulders. Everything from my sternum upwards came with me, leaving behind half a torso attached to a leg, a spreading puddle of black goo, and a few trailing wobbly bits that belonged inside my ribcage. Something flipped me onto my back, and Barry appeared overhead. He put his hands on his hips and clicked his tongue. "Last living thing in an empty world," he sighed, extending his hand once more. "And you're not even alive?" The blast hit me like a 6-ton boulder. I died instantly, and for the last time. I hung in the air above what remained of my body, a steaming patch of dust and slime splattered against the rock like vomit on the pavement outside a treacle shop. Barry admired his handiwork for a second, then turned to his master. "Right, here's the first thing you can do for your god," said Simon. "I'm going to move you into something called an intranet, all right? It's like a really small, boring little world. Simon needs you to track down everything to do with payroll and security clearance. Got all that?"
"For my lord, I will seek any bounty."
"Right on." A shaft of light extended down to Barry. The vicar held out his arms and began to rise, along with the little entourage of deleters that were still sticking out of his upper back. "So that's it," I thought. "Barry's going to ascend into Simon's world and help him take over that one, too. About a minute from now, I'm going to come back to life and spend eternity as a 2-dimensional stain on the rocks." I looked down and saw something stark and white peering at me from my scorched remains. It was one of my eyeballs, gazing up at me like the concentrated essence of a mistreated puppy dog. It was slightly deflated, but unmistakable. The weird-looking octopus eye that Merrill had given me. And then something seemed to click inside my head, and I felt a great and furious energy flooding me, all the way down to the tips of my ghostly fingers. A roar came out of me like a belch of volcanic gas rising from the bottom of an ocean. The deleters inside Barry all turned to look at me, startled. I ran forward and flung myself at him. The part of me that was still coherent expected to phase harmlessly through, and was thoroughly humbled when my arms fastened soundly around his waist. His deleters certainly felt my touch. They all began to simultaneously shriek in agony as the first few corrupted bug deleters invaded their bodies, causing Barry to clap his hands over his ears. I tightened my grip as he continued to ascend. The world flickered out around us, and then we were hurtling at insane speeds along a black tunnel, ringed by row upon row of shining queues of deleters. I bared my teeth, shifted my grip to his lapels, and hauled myself up until we were face to face. "Get off!" he yelled, his voice reverberating oddly. I nutted him in the face as hard as I could. A couple of my tiny deleters jumped off me onto his nose, and he shrieked like a schoolgirl with a caterpillar down her dress. Images rattled across my vision as we ploughed through the deleter universe. Meaningless deleter correspondence, bright colours, and a curiously large number of pictures depicting naked women. That was closer to what I'd always imagined the heavens to be like, but none of them seemed to be enjoying themselves, so I wasn't sure. While I was distracted, Barry brought his fist down on my astral head, which afforded him nothing but an armful of corrupted deleters. I climbed higher and grabbed for one of the deleter heads poking out of his shoulder. My hand closed around it. It was like squeezing a bag of marshmallows wrapped in silk. With an incredibly satisfying ripping sound, I tore the deleter from his body and cast its limp remains into the darkness. Already I could feel myself being dragged back towards the puddle of my own body. I wrapped my legs around Barry's chest to resist the pull, then sunk my teeth into another deleter's face and shook it out of him like a rabid dog. My own deleters were all over him now, and he finally realized that repeatedly punching me was only helping them multiply faster. He tried slapping the swarms away, but only served to spread them to other parts of his body, and more were still pouring out of me at an alarming rate. Then Barry stiffened. He began shaking uncontrollably, the same way the corrupted deleters had. His limbs and chest were swelling and bubbling. Shafts of white light were bursting out of him like a waterbed springing leaks. I barely noticed. I kept hitting him and hitting him until we'd gone as far as the tether to my body would allow. I snapped back, detaching from Barry, and all I could do was watch him rocket away into the darkness. I screamed in rage again. An angry dog denied its chew toy. Soon he was a disappearing pinprick of light in the distant darkness. Then he expanded, exploding with a brilliant radiance into a thousand white streamers that rained down upon the void. Then everything was pulling away from me at speed, streaking into oblivion, and I came back to life. My vision was confused and blurry. I couldn't hear at all. I tried to open my mouth to call out, but my mouth wasn't there. Neither were any of my limbs. I tried to move. No response. All I could determine was that my body was a lot less body-shaped than I remembered. It seemed unusually two-dimensional. Puddle-like. No, I thought. No, this isn't fair. Only one of my eyes was functioning. I focused it as well as I could, but it was half-flattened and leaking goo. All I had was a blurry view from a puddle in the middle of an empty wasteland. No. No. This wasn't the end. It couldn't be. The universe had played a lot of mean tricks on me, but this was crossing the line. Dub, you can't leave me like this. We had a deal. I was promised. You promised it would end. You can't leave me like this. You said you would delete me. Oh, God, please come back. Delete me, 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 delete me. From Brian Garrett to All Staff. Subject, Simon. When I founded Loincloth, it was with the intention to create not just a great environment for game development, but also a family unit for the greatest talent in the industry. In that respect,
As I'm sure you're all aware, I've always liked you all to consider me as a father figure, like the alpha male in a group of lions. And as alpha male, it sometimes falls to me to make harsh decisions for the good of everyone, like driving out difficult elements and killing the cubs of any lion who challenges my leadership. And as I'm sure will come as a surprise to you all, I've regretfully decided to let Simon Townsend go. I've been hearing reports for some time from various individuals of the difficulty Simon's been having fitting in, but at the time dismissed them as the usual new job nerves. The final straw came when IT informed me that the virus that crashed the entire network last week had been uploaded from Simon's terminal. For reasons best known to himself, he created a virus that forced the main Mogworld server to catastrophically reboot, then transferred the virus to the company intranet. This act also brought to light a number of extremely worrying other actions on his part, including the hacking of security protocols in brazen defiance of his employee agreement. So it's with a heavy heart that I am forced to drive him out of the Pride and kill his cubs. I'm sure we all wish him luck in getting over whatever bizarre emotional problems caused him to take these actions. Regards, Brian Garrett, CEO, Loincloth Entertainment.
Sorry,
said Dub. It took me a while to log back in. It's okay. I've locked you out of your body now. You won't go back to it anymore. I looked down sadly at the mess I had become. A lonely island of reddish black in a featureless ocean of grey stone. You used me. Sorry. How many times am I going to have to say sorry? It had to be done. The world was messed up beyond repair. Even without Simon's influence, the whole no-dying thing was making everyone act weird. You're not even the slightest bit regretful, are you? I wasn't even angry, just disappointed, like a schoolteacher admonishing a child for pulling the legs off insects. Messing around with people's lives, forcing them to become something they didn't want to be for fun? For a game? But don't you see, we didn't know. The total lack of sorrow or any other emotion in his voice made my fists clench involuntarily. We had no idea you were self-aware. How could you not know? He paused for so long before he spoke that I wondered if he'd gone away again. Imagine, like a toy maker, they make a doll that looks like a person, but they want to make it as realistic as possible. So they put in a metal skeleton, exactly like a human one. Then they put in a bunch of leather muscles. They give it rubber organs so it can eat and drink and breathe. They give it fake eyes and a voice that says things like hello when it sees someone come in the room. Then they keep adding more and more bits and things for it to say until it looks and acts exactly the same as it would if it were self-aware. Then it actually does become self-aware somehow. How's the toy maker supposed to know? I rubbed my astral temple. Even so, I said. You knew I was self-aware when you sent me to make the world blow up.
and now they're all gone. You made me kill the entire world because it wasn't working out for you anymore? It's not really blowing up the world. It's more like going back in time to before... Well, whatever! I barked, finally raising my voice. The sun hung a little lower in the sky, like the head of a sorrowful dog. Look, I'm really, really, really sorry about everything. We would never have done any of this if we'd known you were self-aware. I promise we'll never do it again. You can't do it again anyway. Everyone's dead, or not been born yet, or whatever. Another pause, not as long this time. Well, yeah, but still... But still what? But still live and learn, right? I sighed. Forget it. Just delete me. Get it over with. Oh, yeah, I figured you'd be wanting that now. Ready? Yes. The green aura burst into life around me, and panic seized me. No, wait! The aura went away. Well, the first time I died, properly died, I felt myself ascending to heaven. I saw a wonderful golden place of love and acceptance, so I just want to know, if you delete me, will I go back there? No, said Dub, after a sheepish pause. We didn't create a heaven. I frowned. So what did I see? I dunno. I heard somewhere you can have weird hallucinations when your brain's dying. Sure, it wasn't one of those. I bowed my head and sighed. So there's no afterlife. No, sorry. A lengthy silence followed. There wasn't even any wind to whistle across the hills. I looked up. Thank God for that.
Man, I just had to do the hardest thing ever. I had no idea deleting a file could be so heartbreaking.
Christ, have you read Brian's email? He thinks he's a lion now or something.
I am never going to have conversations with files I might have to delete again.
Personally, I'm just glad that Dickhead is gone. Never thought Dickhead would be a big enough dickhead to totally dick up the build, though. Trust me to take vacation just when the fun starts.
Are you even listening to me?
Yeah, the NPCs became self-aware.
They knew we were controlling them and everything. They were trying to figure out how to stop us.
Yep, that's a pretty textbook definition of self-awareness. What do you want me to do?
I think we need to go back to source and totally retool the gameplay with all this in mind.
Okay, that can be your job. I'm going to sit here and eat these chips. So you deleted the undead guy, yeah?
His name was Jim, and I feel really bad about it.
Aw, don't cry. There'll be other files. Anyway, wasn't it what he wanted?
He died thinking he destroyed his entire world.
Ah, so, I take it you didn't tell him about the backups.
I wasn't sure how to phrase it so he'd understand. Anyway, that version of him was still going to be deleted. It wouldn't have meant anything.
Oh, stop moping. You give much thought to spiritual matters.
I don't drink.
You ever... Was that a joke?
Maybe.
Okay. You ever heard the quantum suicide theory? It states that a conscious mind can't be destroyed, only moved around to some other world. So maybe a part of him will live on, in theory. This is me humouring you.
In that case, I want to do him a favour for the next build. Sort of a thank you present.
Do whatever the hell you want, as long as it doesn't take too long.
Okay, I need to think on this.
What did I just say?
The last of the worn stone steps, the highest point of the dusty, beast-haunted mountain trail, clattered neath my sandaled foot. 50 white-robed zealots, thin of build and pale of flesh, reacted with a chorus of astonished shrieks.
"You!"
cried the age-tarnished high priest, frozen with his sacrificial dagger still glittering in his gnarled hand.
"How did you escape from the—"
With a single heave of my thunderous shoulders, the enchanted sword Killbastard, forged from the dark metals of the mystic east, swept cleanly through his rangy neck. His well-used vocal cords continued to flex and quiver in the act of shaping rhetoric before his body faltered. The acolytes panicked at the fall of their infernal master. Some ran, driven to hysterics at the mere sight of my oiled mass. Some came forward, ceremonial knives poised to slash, and fell one by one to Killbastard's ferocious bite. The bloodied flash of its relentless blade sent steady ripples through my leathery muscles. Soon none remained to challenge me. I planted my hewn thighs firmly at the corpse-riddled foot of the forsaken altar, and with two powerful flexes of my chiseled biceps, Killbastard split the chains that bound the flame-coiffed Princess Merrill to the slab. Her pale-skinned form sat upright, causing her jeweled bikini to jangle musically about her alabaster skin, and she stretched her stiffening muscles, pushing out her glorious bosoms in a manner most pleasing to my hungry gaze. She flung her wispy arms around my formidable chestnut-hued torso, staining her glittering outfit with chest oil.
"Oh, Jim the Mighty," she cooed, "I never doubted for a moment that you would come."
"'Twas a pleasure, matched only by the glory of victory against the—" I tailed off, then glanced around, confused. "Does something strike you as off?"
"What do you mean, O Lord of Battle?"
"I dunno. I've just been getting this weird sense of something not being right." She frowned, then untangled herself from my mighty thews.
"Now that you mention it, I've been feeling off all day, and I can't stop looking at your nose."
My war-calloused fingers rose to my face and stroked my fine, angular features, which somehow only strengthened my unease. "Yeah, there's definitely something wrong with my nose." Suddenly the cursed volcano spewed forth a magnificent spurt of lava. My hand flew to the shining hilt of bloodthirsty Killbastard. From the abysmal depths of the earth rose the head of a titanic red snake, come up from the deepest Stygian plains. Its visage was that of a hideous dragon, its eyes flaming with ferocious malevolence, and its hungry maw, an 8-foot grin, crammed with spikes of a sharpness that no armor could slow. It appeared to be twirling a butterfly knife in one of its dreadful talons.
"Hello there, my little toast racks," it wheedled. "Care for a spot of ultra-violence?"
"No, no." I threw down the sword and folded my arms. "There's definitely something up, and I'm not starting this epic battle until someone tells me what it is." The fire serpent bit my head off.
"He rejected it. Hang on, I've got another idea."
A peal of thunder roared out from the storm clouds that spread across the blood-red sky, mingled with the wails of the damned. 100 columns of smoke rose from the landscape, each a pulsating finger pointing out my countless dark temples as they completed the day's unholy rites. I stood atop the highest tower of my mightiest fortress, one clawed hand resting on the parapet, the other casually brushing ants away from the hole where my nose had once sat. Below me, my legions of undead warriors fell to their knees rank by rank, their obeisance most pleasing to my undead eyes. "All hail, Jim!" they cried, in the kind of perfect unison only mindless zombie slaves can achieve. "Lich Lord of the Malevolands!"
"Master!"
said Thaddeus, my snivelling vizier, materializing at my elbow.
"We have caught an adventurer attempting to steal from your treasure vault."
"Bring him here," I growled. "No man will be spared the terrible judgment of the Lich Lord." I stalked nobly through the fanged archway that led into my receiving chamber, and settled into the throne of darkness, its many points of extruding bone curling comfortably around my body. My consort, the Black Witch Meryl, levitated him magically into the room, and flung him to the floor at my feet.
"He was able to sneak into the vault through the underground tunnels," hissed Meryl. "We caught him attempting to flee with a sack of gold, considerably larger than the manhole he was trying to climb down."
"So, man-fool," I boomed, every syllable a symphony of evil, "to steal from the Lich Lord Jim is an act of either tremendous bravery or tragic stupidity. Which do you believe is the case?"
"Well, Slippery John reckons it'd be the second one,"
said Slippery John cheerfully.
"Slippery John thought that would have been pretty obvious from the manhole thing."
I glared at him for a second, then threw down my staff and folded my arms. "No, no, this isn't right at all."
"This is harder than I thought."
"What exactly are you doing again?"
"I'm trying to fix Jim."
"Okay, I can see this is important to you, but maybe you're overdoing it a bit. Maybe you should just do something small."
"What, like give him a new hat?"
"Not quite that small."
"I don't know, he's a hard guy to shop for."
"Well, he's your friend."
"Hang on. Okay, I've got something. We're gonna need one of the really old backups."
The sun began to rise, spilling orange dawn over the rolling green hills of the surrounding plains. I noticed that the horizon was a lot more textured than I remembered, and more bristling with siege weaponry. An army was advancing towards the school. Just as I had done on my first day, I deeply resented the fact that St. Gordon's Magical College was not, in fact, a castle.
"All right, chaps, settle down," said the headmaster, resplendent in his star-patterned cardigan as he strode back and forth in front of the student body. "Let me assure you all that there is absolutely no reason to panic."
The rising tension was not eased in the slightest,
It's probably just some misunderstanding. Stop picking your nose, Bottom Roach. But a Stragonoffian army appears to be attacking the college. Now don't...
What's he saying?
Nearby whispering distracted me from the speech. The rest of the student body was shuffling into place behind us, led by Merrill, the first-year head girl. She had a hand on my shoulder and was straining to see over a lanky third-year standing in front.
Is something going on?
Yes, something's going on, I said. For the first time, Merrill noticed whose shoulder she was braced upon.
Jim, do you know what's going on?
She squinted at the horizon.
Is that an army?
It looks like one, doesn't it? The upheld weapons of the besieging horde on the horizon grew bigger and better defined by the second. And I noticed at that point that we had been assembled in a manner that could be described as regimental. I think they might be expecting us to fight it.
Oh dear. Really?
I think so. Merrill jumped up and down a few times.
There's a lot of them.
How many?
About 1,000? No, wait. 2,000. Perspective threw me off.
I stood on tiptoe. The sun had risen further by now, and the heaving mass of armour and sharp weaponry was clearer than ever. Our pathetic assembly wouldn't even slow them. Neither, I suspected, would the school building. I think I'm going to sit this out, I said.
What did you say?
Asked Merrill.
Where are you going?
The next thing I knew, I was making my way through the students. I pushed a couple of senior years aside and stepped out into the heat of the headmaster's glare.
Did you have a question, Bottom Roach?
Yeah, I mean, no, I said, fidgeting uneasily under everybody's scrutiny. I don't really want to die, so I'm just going to leave. The headmaster's face twisted as if he were marking an essay with particularly bad grammar.
You need not die, he said patiently. This is your chance to prove yourself a hero.
I winced. I'm still not terribly comfortable with it. The headmaster's complexion reddened.
This, he barked, like a burst of air escaping from a balloon, is a school of battle magic. You are here to learn magic in the application of combat and adventuring. If you honestly wish to eschew your very first real-world experience, then there is no reason for you to be attending this institution.
I took another look at the approaching army. It hadn't gotten any smaller. Then I glanced back at the school's defensive force, just in case 1,500 backup wizards had arrived while I wasn't looking. I guess I'll be off then, I said.
Right, continued the headmaster, as I made my way towards the back gate. Now that the time wasters have come forward, perhaps those of us who are unafraid of victory can discuss strategy.
Anyone want to come with me? I interjected, turning around. Anyone else not want to die?
As I was saying, continued the headmaster, after a particularly thoughtful silence.
No, really, look, I said. There's thousands of them. You will definitely die if you stay here. It won't mean anything. You're not making any kind of grand gesture. You're just going to be dead. So is no one else going to come with me?
I'll come with you,
cried Merrill, raising a defiant fist.
All right, shouted the headmaster manically. Everyone with no concept of heroism is invited to get the hell out of my school. Everyone else can stay where they are and...
An arrow slammed into his temple.
Glurble, blurble, flip.
Jim,
called Merrill, after we'd begun climbing the big grassy hill on St. Gordon's south face. "I think we should go back." I was panting. The hill was getting steep, and exhaustion